right. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon, Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, 11 minutes after 12 o'clock on this, well, it's a balmy Monday afternoon, kind of gloomy, but a balmy anyway. So, Kim, the Senate has voted. The House hasn't voted yet, right? The House vote's coming up?
Right. I don't know exactly what time that's scheduled for, but, I mean, we can assume it's a done deal pretty much.
Yeah, Paul Ryan said earlier that if the Senate comes through, that the House would follow.
Right. So, they have until February 8th to...
yeah, okay.
So, time's still a ticking.
You know what? Let's just not pay attention until February 7th, because nothing will happen anyway.
Exactly.
Kim Gordon watching what's going on Wall Street and on Pennsylvania Avenue and at the Capitol today for WGN Radio. We'll keep you posted on that. In the studio this afternoon, Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis from Chicago Inno. They join us on most Mondays, and this is a Monday. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, hey, Steve.
The football games are digested. We've got a couple weeks off before the Super Bowl starts. Let's start with Foursquare. You know, everyone's talking about Amazon and Apple and their second headquarters. Foursquare, Catherine, is actually... expanding a bit in Chicago.
Yeah, so Foursquare, it's a New York-based tech company. They make an app that helps people find places nearby to eat or drink or hang out at. And they are opening an engineering office here in Chicago. So they have plans to hire 5 or 6 and then expand that team throughout 2018.
So yeah, I have never quite warmed up to Foursquare. How about you?
I haven't used it, but I could see how it could be useful. I mean, I'm constantly scouring the web trying to figure out places, new places to eat.
And there are apps now that we've had the guys in who are developing that, like Happy Hours Nearby or Bars
Spotlight Nearby. Specials.
Spotlight,
yeah.
Special, right. And so that's just a particular app that would try to do what Foursquare is doing for an entire media site?
Yes.
Yeah, and Foursquare is also doing some B2B stuff too. So they're kind of selling their location intelligence information to businesses as well. So they're kind of expanded sort of beyond the initial idea. And so really the interesting thing here is that they had a sales office here in Chicago, about 10 folks here in a WeWork space, and really, you know, as a lot of coastal tech companies do, set up a sales office here. The interesting thing is now there are real tech jobs here, real engineering roles coming to Chicago,
and they're hiring, right? They're advertising for engineering.
Yeah, they're adding about 5 or 6 engineers this year in 2018, and expect to do more so in the years to follow. So it's really interesting, right? You know, to get an engineering job in Foursquare, you'd have to be in New York or in San Francisco, but now that's certainly changing. So I think it's indicative of Chicago's growing tech scene.
So that's a sign of things to come or a sign of things as they've been happening?
I think it could definitely be a sign of things to come, right? I mean, I think you're seeing these coastal tech companies that are very well known, very consumer focused, find success in expanding Chicago. Does that mean that we're going to get Amazon's headquarters? Does it mean we're going to get Google's new office that they're trying to open? Who knows? But what it does show is that there is confidence in Chicago's tech talent.
Catherine, you know that I'm a heavy bettor. I'm always looking for some place to put my money,
mm-hmm.
and Amazon. I think there's action you can bet in Ireland on Amazon. Now, this Sperling's Best Places just came out and ranked the different Amazon headquarters. Chicago came in number 9 of the top 20 for Sperling. And you know what I think we've talked about of note is that there were 3 spots around Washington, D.C., right?
Yep.
2 around New York, Newark and New York. So that's 20% of the locations are either in D.C. or New York, which probably, I mean, that's I don't know what it means for Chicago, but it can't be a great thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, based on, you know, everything I've been reading and our coverage, I would put my money on the D.C. area, especially because Bezos has, he owns the Washington Post. So he's got a home there, he's got connections there. It makes sense.
So if that's the case, is all the rest of it just a charade?
It is kind of funny that they chose 20 cities. Like, I think that they probably could have cut that list in half and like still had like as meaningful, if not a more meaningful search, right? I think some of these cities out there are certainly not going to get it. I mean, Chicago to me feels like they're kind of on the outside looking in. I mean, the DC area certainly seems to be kind of an early favorite.
Do you think they know now where they're going to go?
My guess is they've got a pretty good idea. But there are also some dark horses here that I kind of think are interesting. Like Columbus, Ohio certainly does not top the list when you get down to the...
We hear about them in tech a lot.
But there's a lot of tech innovation going on in Columbus. They have a lot of driverless car innovations. They actually led the Hyperloop proposal for the Midwest. So like the high-speed train, that was Elon Musk's idea. They were spearheading that idea. And the Midwest Hyperloop proposal is made it to the next round of steps.
There's a piece on MarketWatch today, an opinion piece, I think it is, that says Toronto could be a city to really watch. That, you know, they've got the workforce. They're not hindered by the U.S. government garbage that goes on, and that they might be someone. Now, that would be a big move. That's out of the country.
Right. But there's a lot of tech happening in Toronto. There's a huge artificial intelligence sort of wave happening through. There's a lot of smart folks in Toronto. So certainly that would be a viable option.
What are the bettors saying in Ireland?
All right. So we got some betting odds here. The bettors have
Is it Lance?
Boston.
Who is it? Is it Paddy's or Lance?
Yeah. So let's Paddy Lansbrook? Power. So yeah, they are taking bets on HQ2, and they've got Boston as the favorite at 3-1.
No, that's an Irish thing.
And following up is Austin, Atlanta, Montgomery County. Chicago is pretty middle of the pack at 16-1.
All right, so are we feeling kind of blue today?
I don't know. I mean, I think that Chicago, like I said, is definitely kind of on the outside looking at. I think it would be a surprise if we got it. I mean, I think there are, as we've said on this program, a ton of benefits if Amazon comes to town. There are also quite a bit of negatives that are going to happen wherever Amazon decides to land. So I think there are going to be people who are going to be excited no matter what the decision is.
I've never really wanted it to come here.
Why not?
Okay, I'm lying through my teeth. No, I totally want it to. I'm not going to get down about it, but it does. For me, aside from the rankings and the betting and all of that, the geography of the choices, I just think speaks volumes. The idea that there are three outside D.C., that shows you that that's a region they're looking at, not a specific site location.
Right.
All right, Catherine Davis is here, and Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inn. We're going to take a break when we come back. I wanted a couple of things. The Mom Project is fascinating to me, and they're doing a deal with BP. And then there's, it's called Evolve Her, first women-only co-working space. Jim Dahlke just put that story up online, so we'll talk to him about that coming up. 12:22, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke are in the studio. A little bit later in the program, Randy Schaefer will come by. She is a digital editor for the Chicago Tribune. They got a piece about an influencer, right? A social media influencer who tried to hit up this hotel in Dublin saying, hey, I want 5 free nights and then I'll praise your hotel in my blog post, in my video blog. And they said no, and they banned her from it, and then it got out, and now the hotel's suffering. It's quite a story. So we'll talk to Randy Schaefer about that in the second half hour. Women in the workplace right now. The Mom Project, we've either talked about it or talked to the founder, Allison Robinson. But it's kind of a cool idea, right, Catherine?
Yeah.
She was in the workforce and then out because of a baby and then was trying to find a way back in and turned it into a business.
Yeah. So it's a Chicago-based startup, and she has an online job marketplace that helps connect employers to candidates looking to get back into the job market. So, those could be people who took off time to raise a family or for other personal reasons, maybe an illness. And she helps connect them and get them, candidates that they wouldn't normally be seeing.
And so the idea is then, rather than being in this big pool of everyone looking for a job, it's a little more specific. So is it more for employers to look at her or for them to look at employers?
Really? I mean, it's like mutually beneficial.
Right.
I mean, employers, they can now find maybe older candidates or people with certain kinds of experience. And then, of course, if you're a mom looking to get back.
I think I read you wrote she's got like 10 people working for her.
Yep.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And 20,000 users.
And 20,000 users. And tell me about this. I love the term returnship program at BP.
Yeah. So she's recently partnered with BP, the oil company, for the returnship program. So right now, it began in September. There's 5 women in it. And they're holding various roles at BP right now. And at the end of the program in March, they get to apply for full-time permanent positions there.
There are other companies that do that. It makes a lot of sense. Returnship. People have been out of the workforce to come back because they need to prove themselves again in a way and update their skills and things like that. Do you know of others?
Not specific ones, but it does sound like it's a trend. I mean, BP said that they were doing this because they have goals to get more women in the company. And, as more companies prioritize that, I'm sure we'll see more programs like this.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really great platform, right? So because a company like BP wants to make its corporate workforce more diverse, get more women in the fold, and what a great way to do that, right? To find women who have already had experience in the corporate world, who just left it for whatever reason, start a family or what have you, and then give them an opportunity to come work at BP. So it's a really smart platform.
Dahlke put up a story just within an hour or two ago, right?
Yeah.
And I cannot sort out how I feel about it. I don't know how I feel about it. But the company's called Evolve Her. It's a co-working space, and it involves women only.
That's right. So we are seeing a trend really across the country of women-only co-working spaces. Co-working is not a new thing to Chicago, but this trend actually is. So Evolve Her is a 5,000-square-foot co-working space in River North, a nice loft space they've got there, and it is no boys allowed.
So co-working spaces like WeWork or whatever, right? It's a big office space. You rent a spot there.
Yeah, you can get some dedicated office space or so kind of working kind of more collaboratively. But yeah, I mean, there are over 120 co-working spaces in Chicago, Evolve Her, though, being a little bit different, right?
Right.
So they're really, really making this exclusive to women entrepreneurs or women founders, folks who want to work inside a space only with other women.
And there are others in Chicago that are sort of subgroups? Or
There is a smaller sort of example, the Ladies Room Chicago. It's sort of a co-working space inside a co-working space, so they work out of Coalition Impact, so they kind of have the similar ideas. But Evolve Her really is sort of the biggest of its size to launch in Chicago, and really kind of offering all the same amenities that you would get at kind of a traditional co-working space, okay. Except the people beside you are all women.
Do you like this idea?
I like the idea. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense. I talked to the founder, and you know, it's not a coincidence that this trend of all female co-working spaces is popping up along with the Me Too and the Time's Up and the political environment, right, that we're currently in, right? So it's not a surprise to see a need for this pop up. And what happens is, you know, it's a safe space for women to talk, you know, to be vulnerable with one another and not have to like have him sort of, you know, a man leering over their shoulder.
Catherine, you happen to be the only woman in the room.
Yeah, you know, I think it's an interesting idea. You know, if you are going to work out of this, you know, if you're a startup founder and you want to work out of this space, all of your employees then have to be women as well, right?
Ah, good
point.
So,
you know, thinking about who is this realistic for? Is, you know, just one thing I've been thinking about. So
that's an excellent point. I understand the desire, I guess. I don't think the society and the culture is going to be furthered by further segregation. That's my one worry. So I don't know that this is a solution.
We'll see. You know, it's funny. WeWork, the co-working space, which is obviously for everyone, just led a $32 million investment round in a women-only co-working space. So even WeWork is seeing value and investing its resources in a women-only.
Well, the value space being that there's a client base. I mean,
sure,
that they can sell it, but that,
yeah,
doesn't always make it a positive thing or an altogether good thing.
We'll see. But I mean, I'd imagine that if you speak to the women who are in these places, they would say they haven't gotten a lot of value from the co-working spaces that they maybe been in before, right? So
right,
maybe this is an opportunity for them to be in an environment that's, you know, better for them.
That's Jim Dahlke, Catherine Davis, both from Chicago. No, thanks for coming by, guys. Have
thanks,
a great
Steve.
Week.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon, Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Now, Kim, don't go anywhere. We are following the story out of Washington, D.C., and all the way up to Wall Street. The markets reacted positively to news today. We hope to catch up with Marion McGovern. She's the author of Thriving in the Gig Economy, but maybe she's got another gig because she's not picking up her phone right now. I don't know. So just review for me and tell me where we are on this budget solution. Is it a solution? Maybe a temporary solution? What's up?
Well, I mean, I think it is a temporary solution. The two parties have agreed to reopen the government till February 8th, and then the Republicans have promised the Democrats that during that time they will renegotiate and begin negotiating on immigration.
And so now it goes to the House.
Goes to the House. I have not heard or seen when the House plans to vote. I was just looking for that, but
So that means that Treasurer Secretary Mnuchin's jet is fueling up. As you know, he was leading the U.S. delegation to Davos, and that was kind of...
And they were waiting to go until there was a deal.
Right.
So
and President Trump is supposed to... I don't know when the president's going to leave. He wasn't going to leave today, I don't think, but he is waiting as well until all this gets sewed together.
And he's actually supposed to speak later this afternoon. I don't have a hard start time for that, but the president is going to talk about the deal.
Okay, and so as I understand it then, the Democrats, they didn't get what they wanted as far as the Dreamers, but they've got sort of a pledge that that McConnell will bring up the Dreamers with legislation before this funding bill ends.
Right. They have agreed to begin debating the immigration by that February 8th date. So anytime between now and February 8th, they will start to talk about it.
And so that's interesting. So the language says that they will begin to debate it, but they won't necessarily resolve
right.
it.
Right. And Senator Durbin, you know, I don't know if you heard my news earlier, but he had a message for Dreamers to, you know, that we're pulling for you, basically, and, you know, Just stick with it. We're going to get this done.
That's an interesting thing because, you know, I there was a House proposal or they were floating a proposal over the weekend, and I hadn't really thought about it too much because I thought, okay, you're going to save the dreamers or you're not. And if you're a dreamer, you're a dreamer. If you're not a dreamer, you're not a dreamer. But there was this legislation being floated that said, you know, if you were brought to the country between this time or that time, or if you were of this age or that age, and they put a lot of restrictions on it so that by one count, I think it was only 40 to 50% of what we think of as dreamers would have actually been protected by the plan.
Right. And I also think, Steve, that, you know, we don't know what else is going to be tied to this immigration deal. Where are we at with building the wall and funding the wall and all those different things? I'm not sure if, you know, we're going to get into that whole debate of and negotiation between and that, you know.
It was interesting, too, because I know Schumer said that he last week told the president that he would give him, I was at $1.6 billion for the wall, which was what was asked for in this year's allocation. And the president heard that he was going to get everything he wanted for the wall. And then when he found out wasn't true, the aide sort of reneged on that or said Schumer wasn't being altogether upfront. So there's all of that fighting.
Right. And also there was when Schumer was talking before the vote, he really pinned all this on the president and said the president, you know, he hadn't talked or seen the president since Friday. And the White House refused to negotiate over the weekend. So this bipartisan effort came with no help from President Trump.
What are they saying today? Are you hearing from it? And I was listening to Amy Klobuchar earlier, the Democrat from Minnesota, and Republican Lindsey Graham, and they came out being hopeful that, you know, it looked as if maybe a couple of hours ago that this deal was done. But what sort of rhetoric have you heard from the floor today? Anything that you wouldn't have expected?
No, it's pretty much down party lines, what we've expected. I mean, you know, Senator McConnell did give props to the Democrats saying, you know, thank you for working with us. And this is our pledge that we will work on immigration. But it was pretty much down the party line, what you'd expect to hear.
Kim Gordon in the WGN newsroom. She's going to continue to follow that. And we'll have more coming up in the news at 1. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, we hear all of this about the gig economy, and it's ever growing, right? But that presents challenges to not just people who are in it, but people who are trying to bring people into it, get benefits to them, all of that stuff. Marion McGovern has written a book called Thriving in the Gig Economy, and she joins us on a phone line now. Marion, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
All right. How many people are in the gig economy now?
It depends on what study you look at because there aren't government numbers, but it's somewhere between 40 and 50 million.
And I guess I asked that question. I asked that question just because to set up my next is that how many people will be in the gig economy 5-10 years from now? Twice that? More than twice that?
I would say probably 25% more easily.
25% more.
But, you know,
okay.
There is this notion that people will go in and out, right? So you work independently for a while, and then maybe you work in regular work, and then you go back again to independent work.
And this is a positive thing, right? I mean, it allows much more flexibility. I would imagine it's positive for business as well in that they are not saddled with long-term employee commitments in cases where it works.
Well, first on the employee side, you know, 70% of the people are doing this by choice. This is not, oh gosh, I can't find a regular job. I'm stuck doing this. Not only are they doing it by choice, more than 50% would not go back to regular employment regardless of how good the job was.
No, it's freedom. I mean, as long as you can identify the income stream and keep it going. But that's sort of the problem, isn't it? One of the challenges is to identify that income stream.
Well, and it's the predictability of it. You know, you'll have a gig for a while, and then all of a sudden, boom, you'll be working so hard that you wouldn't have been able to be doing business development.
Right. Oh, yeah, good point. Right. So
that volatility is the thing that's really tough for folks. But, you know, there are cool entrepreneurs out there trying to figure out how you get rid of the frictions. And there's a company in Dublin, Ireland, that is working on a fintech product to take away that income volatility.
Oh, so you have a little more, it's easier to manage with the product than it would
Correct.
Be if you were doing it on your own. The Trump administration has had a great impact on business and business regulations. Has it done anything that would impact the gig economy in one way or another?
Not in a major way yet, although people are thinking that it will. Kind of a bigger thing on the horizon, which hopefully they'll get to at some point. Senator Mark Warner has a bill that he has proposed to be able to pilot portable benefits, benefits that would travel with the worker rather than be from an employer.
Oh, explain that. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, so it would be a way to get benefits that would pay attention to, you know, how much you were working. I mean, there, again, the idea is to pilot different models. There's an organization called the Freelancers Union in New York, which would potentially run one of these pilots, and there are other entities that would run another. So you try different ideas of how you do this for a year, and then that outcome could inform what could become legislation to create portable benefits.
So you'd get benefits almost like from a union rather than from the places where you're working?
Again, the details of how these pilots would work haven't really been released, but right. I think the idea is if you work 20 hours for Uber and then 30 hours for yourself, somehow you would there would be fees that pay that support the benefits. Quite frankly, I don't know how.
But it's
work in the right direction.
Tell me some other things. What other big changes do you think we'll see in the next year when it comes to the gig economy?
Well, again, as I say, they're already interesting entrepreneurs taking frictions out of the market. There's a great development with insurance of a different sort, professional liability insurance. So it's kind of the malpractice for consultants, uh-huh. if you will, where Bunker Insurance is a startup where they created a not only a cost-effective platform for being able to get professional liability insurance, but you can get it just for one gig. So if you get this great gig with Hewlett Packard and they say, oh, but you need $1 million of liability insurance, that's an enormous cost for an independent consultant. Well, now you can actually get it just for that project, so you don't have to have it cover all of your business.
Which makes it so much more affordable. That is a huge deal. Marion McGovern has written the book, The Thriving in the Gig Economy. Listen, it was great to talk to you. I'm glad you did. I hope we can check in again soon.
Absolutely, love to.
Okay, it's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. We're going to go to Dublin, actually, to a hotel there that has banned all social influencers. Randy Schaefer will tell you why coming up on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's a Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, Randy Schaefer's in the studio. She's a digital editor for the Chicago Tribune, and she talks about what's what in social media. And, okay, I can't wait to talk about this video blogger. She's in whatever, but we're not going to go first. First, we're going to do this Tide Pod thing.
Oh, gosh.
And so, you know, years ago, Governor Quinn was in here and when I was working mornings, and that was the big cinnamon challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of talked him into eating a teaspoon or tablespoon of cinnamon and then trying to talk afterward, because that was kind of how it got started, right?
Right. It was that or the gallon of milk challenge. That was a thing, too,
that
like
sounds
drinking
terrible.
A gallon of milk in an hour.
Okay, so you'd eat the cinnamon, then you'd try to talk. Well, now it's moved to the... these dishwasher Tide Pods or laundry
detergent Tide Pods.
Okay, so the pod is that you put that in instead of the liquid or powder.
Yeah, in case you don't like pouring, you know.
Right. Who likes pouring anymore?
Exactly. It's 2018.
And so people are eating these.
Yes.
What's that about?
That's a good question. I'm still searching my soul to find out the answer to that one. But it started as kind of a meme, and now it's a YouTube prank where kids are taking videos of themselves and, you know, like Snapchat or Instagram stories eating Tide Pods.
But the for our purposes, what's interesting is the social media response from Tide, because, you know, this isn't sort of your typical branding thing. They've got to really be on it, and they have been.
Yeah, they have. They're actually, their customer service on Twitter has been doing a really great job at replying to all of these. You know, a lot of them are probably just kids joking around about, oh, like I ate a Tide Pod and now I feel like my stomach is burning a hole. And, you know, of course the kid's kidding, but Tide, they're acting pretty responsible about the whole thing, replying to all of these kids and saying, like, hey, here's the number for poison control. Call us and let us know that you're feeling better.
And they actually said that, right? Go call poison control, call your doctor, and then when you're feeling better, call and let us know.
Right. So I imagine their entire social media team has the poison control number memorized,
right,
at this point.
They even had Rob Gronkowski do a promotional video for them.
Right, yeah, about how not to eat Tide Pods.
Poor Rob, he sent out the game yesterday with a concussion, so.
I must have missed it.
You didn't watch the games yesterday?
No, I didn't.
Okay, fine, enough of that. Let's go to Dublin. I love this story, and I don't know if we're going to agree with this, but there's this social media influencer, and you've schooled me a lot on that. You know, they're someone who, they've got a lot of followers. She's got thousands of followers on Instagram and elsewhere, and that's kind of how she makes her money. 87,000 followers to her YouTube channel, 76,000 Instagram followers, and she makes cash by being a quote-unquote social media influencer.
Right, so the premise of that is, you know, she'll get a good or service for free, she'll post about it on her social media, and people will go buy that good or service, and, you know, that way she's not paying money for it, but whoever is providing her with this good or service is profiting.
Is that her currency? I mean, does she get ads, ad revenue from YouTube and things like that as well?
I'm sure she does, but for this story, this is kind of
yeah, so
what
for this story,
about.
She wanted to go to Dublin, apparently, and she reached out to this Dublin hotel, said, let me stay there for 5 free nights. I'll say really good things about your hotel in exchange. And the guy said no.
Yeah, the guy said, he said, no, you know, if you do this, how am I, exposure doesn't pay my housekeeping, exposure doesn't pay like the kitchen staff. No, he's like, I don't need your exposure. I have a pretty big social media following of my own, which he also does. He has hundreds of thousands of followers. This is the White Moose Hotel in Dublin, owned by Paul Stenson, by the way. And he basically screenshotted this email that she had sent asking him for her stay, posted it on Facebook with this long rant about influencers and bloggers.
Right. And then they found out it was, he blocked out her name and image.
Right.
People found out who it was. She then responded by ripping the hotel.
Right.
And he's probably wishing he'd never done any of that now.
Well, not entirely. There's actually been a lot of feedback from a lot of people who are kind of sick of bloggers and influencers. And, you know, they don't like these comp stays because you're getting something for free. You're not going to say that it sucks if you got it for free.
Right.
So there are a lot of people that are actually in favor of this hotel saying like, hey, cool, like, good on you for standing up for this. We want to come stay in your hotel now.
So for me, I was thinking, like, well, this is her business. This is what she does.
Right.
It might be a little dishonest.
Right.
Or it is a little dishonest.
Yeah.
It is. Not even a little. It's dishonest.
Right.
And so it kind of came back to bite her, maybe.
I'm not sure. We'll have to wait for a few
weeks. I need
weeks
a winner and
see.
I need a loser, Randy. Who's the winner? Who's
I can't tell you right now. We'll try back next week.
All right. Randy Schaefer writes about all of this for the Chicago Tribune, digital editor. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you for having me.